They set out to murder President Kennedy, and there's no question that they did. And of course, there's so many books written about that. There were well over 100 people who were affiliated with the murder of President Kennedy, who died under strange circumstances, and that's covered in a book entitled The Missing Witnesses, and you can find that, actually. It's up on Craig Roberts' website. But right now in studio, we have with us Bruce Adamson, and Bruce has written 13 or 14 volumes on a man named George Des Moines Sheldon. Bruce is certainly the world's leading expert on George Des Moines Sheldon. George Des Moines Sheldon, of course, was the handler for Lee Harvey Oswald, and certainly we'll actually have our producers wondering what's going on certainly at 5 minutes after why KKMC picks up the program. So right now, Bruce, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself for our listeners who don't know who you are?
Well, I'm a self-taught genealogist. I've been doing genealogy since 1982. And I got into my second great-grandfather, who was secretary of the New York Stock Exchange for 45 years, Captain George W. Ely, and then I wrote a book on him, and then another book on Rufus Easton, who was first postmaster of St. Louis. That's my fourth great-grandfather, and I just found genealogy is a neat way to spend time, you know, and learning, you know, about one's heritage and tying things together, and I just really like doing family history.
All right, so Bruce basically was into genealogy, and then what happened was he actually won a lawsuit, and instead of taking that money and having a good time investing it in wine, women, and song, he decided he was going to do something worthwhile, and he bought himself a van or a camper. And he started traveling around the country to research a man named George Des Moines Sheldon. Now, there's a lot of information that's out there. Des Moines Sheldon is covered in the Warren Commission report. But, of course, the Warren Commission did not come up with a great deal of information that Bruce did. And we're going to be back here in just a minute to tell you about Bruce Adamson and George Des Moines Sheldon. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Bruce Adamson. And Bruce has done a great deal of research going into the background of a man named George Des Moines Sheldon. Sheldon was Lee Harvey. Lee Harvey Oswald had worked for the intelligence agencies, probably for both the FBI, the CIA, military. He'd gone over to Russia as part of a plant, and he was actually, when he came back to the United States, he'd married the daughter of a colonel in the Soviet KGB. His way back was paid by the United States State Department. Why would the State Department have had transportation of Lee Harvey Oswald back to this country? Well, I feel it, even at that time, he was being set up for the terrible thing that was happened then on the 22nd of November, 1963. So, Bruce, how did you begin to get the information on the background of Des Moines Sheldon? Where did you start in your research?
Well, I went up to the University of Santa Cruz, and I went through the 26 volumes, and I started reading the testimony of these individuals. And I came across Mrs. and Mr. George Des Moines Sheldon. And I read that in the 26 volumes that George Des Moines Sheldon had dated Jackie Kennedy's mother, and I thought that was really strange. That Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend, according to the Warren Commission, had dated the mother of the First Lady, President Kennedy.
All right, fine. So this just didn't sound quite right to you. You almost had a feeling there was just too much of a coincidence. So after that had happened, and you realized that Des Moines Sheldon was a major player in this, having, you know, certainly dated Jackie Kennedy's mother, where did you go to begin accumulating information on Des Moines Sheldon?
Well, you know, I did some more research, and I came up that he committed suicide, and for 6 months prior to his suicide, he was saying that Oswald was set up for the assassination. And I said to myself, well, that's like a dying declaration. And he did this outside of West Palm Beach. Outside of Palm Beach, his relatives owned, like, at one time, a 1 mile of the beachfront property, the Pearson family. And so I contacted the West Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, and I served them with the Freedom of Information Act, which they didn't have to honor because they're not a federal government. But I spoke to the colonel who investigated Des Moines Sheldon's suicide, and it was the first coroner's inquest in the state of Florida. And I said, hey, you don't have the time. They ruled it a suicide. You don't have the time to do genealogical research on everybody in Des Moines Show's phone book. But, you know, I had just won a case had the settlement. So I spent like 2 years researching and doing genealogical research on everybody inside Des Moines Show's phone book.
Hold on, Buck. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And what happened was that Bruce, who's in the studio with us, Bruce Adamson, went to Florida, and this is where George Des Moines Child had lived, and of course for 6 months before he so-called committed suicide, he had been saying that Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy. Now, what year was that?
That was he was saying that in 1976, yeah. And he committed suicide March 31st, 1977.
All right, fine. So this is about 14 years after President Kennedy had been killed. And here's a man who had been very close to Lee Harvey Oswald, who's saying that Oswald was set up. Now he commits suicide, and he committed suicide the very day he received a subpoena to appear before the House Intelligence Committee or Select Committee that was investigating the murder. This was one of the last major investigations. This was the congressional investigation that came up with the conclusion that there was a conspiracy. Well, they were going to, of course, to subpoena George Des Moines Shell, but he committed suicide the day he received the subpoena. So Bruce then goes down, talks to the police there, who declared this to have been a suicide, and Bruce asks if he can get a copy of George Des Moines Hill's address book, because there's all sorts of fascinating names there. There's names like, and these are the people that Des Moines Hill was in touch with, people like George Herbert Walker Bush, people like Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was the president of the United States at the time. In fact, he became president as a direct result of the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald or somebody had killed John Kennedy. And there were all sorts of other names there, fascinating names, that began to tie so much of what was going on together. And so, Bruce, you pick up the story there. You begin then to track these stories. You actually, of course, went down to Texas, went through Lyndon Johnson's papers. And what was the relationship between the handler for Lee Harvey Oswald and the George Des Moines Shield?
Well, I found two letters at the LBJ Library where they're writing to one another and wanting to meet 6 months or 7 months before the assassination. And so why would the vice president want to meet with Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend? So, you know, is it just coincidence? And the really shocking was that they were writing to each other a week after Oswald allegedly shot at right-wing general, Major General Walker. And Des Moines Shield is hanging out with Oswald at that very time he's shooting at Walker, allegedly. We don't know if it's a fact of who shot the shot, but I found that interesting. And then I was able to circumstantially prove that Des Moines Shield meets with Lyndon Johnson on April 26, 1963, 7 months before the assassination, and then again on May 20th. 1963.
So why is the President of the United
States, Vice President,
the Vice President of the United States, a meeting with this rather obscure individual?
Yep, that's what it bothered me. And then I kept digging and digging and digging.
And he actually had two meetings with him then.
Two meetings, yes. And the second meeting on May 20th, shortly before that.
You're going to have to talk right into the microphone.
Prescott Bush's banking firm, Brown Brothers and Harriman, I gave Des Moines Shield a $300,000 line of credit.
Now, for our listeners out there, Prescott Bush is the president's grandfather. Prescott Bush was a member of Skull and Bones. George Herbert Walker Bush was a member of Skull and Bones, a director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Vice President of the United States, President of the United States, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, member of the Bilderbergers, member of the Trilateral Commission, and also, of course, knew George Des Moines Shield.
Right. And as you can see, I have a letter written in 1993 that Des Moines Shield, Bush Sr., wrote to me that he admitted knowing Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend since 1942 when he went to school at Andover. And so that was kind of strange that he wrote to me back in 93, But de Moorenschild had an office in the CIA Trust Republic National Bank building in Dallas. And what was so important is that George Bush Sr.'s mentor, Neil Mallon, the classmate of Prescott Bush, also had three floors in that building running Dressers Industries, which worked closely with the CIA.
And, of course, this whole thing ties into the Central Intelligence Agency, which is a shadow government that really runs things behind the scenes and has been involved in so many nefarious activities. It's very difficult to figure out what really goes on. Occasionally you'll have a Senate investigation, as you had the Church Committee. And, of course, what they found out, that the CIA had assassinated Mr. Diem and Mr. Nu in Vietnam, that assassinated Patrice Lumumba in Africa, that assassinated a man named Trujillo in the Dominican Republic. Now, those were the three of the assassinations that they discovered, but I'm sure there were many others that they didn't discover. The CIA kills people, and they get away with it, and nothing is ever done. Oh, we're going to have another investigation. Sort of reminds me of the coal mine accidents. We've been mining coal for 100 years, and after the two recent accidents, oh, we're going to have an investigation. Oh, we're going to take care of this. And you know they're not going to do anything. It's all to make the American people feel better, as if we're going to do something. Well, the CIA ran the Vietnam War. The CIA, in large part, is running the war over there in Iraq today. There are all sorts of private little army groups that are funded by the CIA, and what they're doing, we have no idea. We do know they're involved in the torture there at Abu Ghraib prison. And many of the people who were actually convicted for torture said, well, we were ordered to do what we did by the CIA agents who are working there. So they're working behind the scenes, and you're not allowed to, because they've got journalists planted in the media. They carry out assassinations even to this day. And if you doubt that, I suggest the book Fixing Intelligence by General William Odom. General William Odom, who formerly was with the NSA, his book Fixing Intelligence, published in the year, can't come right out and say that CIA is assassinating people. He simply asks, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA have journalists, working in the news media? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? And I would disagree with every one of those statements, and what General William Odom was a patriot, but is not allowed to tell you the truth. But he can ask questions, and those questions are very telling. So the CIA obviously was, certainly involved with the assassination of President Kennedy, and they had to have the FBI involved as well, didn't you, Bruce? They couldn't have done it alone.
Well, I found a letter, FBI document. Somebody else found it. Joseph McBride, I believe, who wrote for Nation magazine, an article that George Bush of the CIA was being briefed by J. Edgar Hoover the day after the assassination. And then Bush wrote me a letter that he was friends with Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend.
No, de Moorenschild.
De Moorenschild, since 1942. And then, I was able to circumstantially prove, I feel, that Bush Sr. was in charge of the Bay of Pigs invasion. That's one of his first projects.
And she was with the CIA for a long period of time. You don't just suddenly get appointed director of the CIA out of nowhere, He was appointed the director of the CIA in 1976, but obviously he had a long history of being affiliated with them.
As did his father's best friend, Neil Mallon, who George Bush got his first job out of the Navy, working for Neil Mallon at Dresser Industry, and Neil Mallon had letters between Neil Mallon and Alan Dulles dated 1953, and Prescott Bush is receiving a copy of these, and that's the year Bush Sr. founded Zapata Oil.
All right, so
which is offshore drill, has 100 man acres, but they would drill for pretend they're drilling for oil, but actually they're monitoring, and they were parked 51 miles north of Cuba when Castro took over in Cuba.
Well, I think a series of banks throughout the world. It has its own air force, and that, of course, what has been brought out as far as these torture flights, where they're taking people all over the world to be tortured and keep them in secret prisons in the name of course, fighting terrorism. What CIA financed terrorism? They financed the Mujahideen all during the 1980s. They financed the Al-Qaeda after it was formed, and somebody killed the leader of Al-Qaeda, a man named Abdul Azam, and everybody's always thought that was done by bin Laden. Well, I believe he had some help. professional assassins. If you read the book, one of the book we have called Dollars for Terror, they will tell you that the CIA actually had funded the whole Al-Qaeda movement along with Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, right up, of course, until 1999 when this book was written. So you find the CIA working within the shadows. Did you encounter any resistance from the CIA as you began to investigate this? Because an awful lot of people who have looked into it, Bruce, have died under very mysterious circumstances.
Well, that's what intimidation is all about. The CIA uses intimidation, and I've had Colonel Fletcher Prouty support my research, a colonel in the Army who was a prosecutor for the Judge Advocate General, Leon Panetta, but Leon Panetta is only one guy. He can't blow the whistle on Bill Clinton's CIA. It's like a giant corporation, and it's like, but somebody at some point, somebody has to be held accountable. And I haven't done it for the money. I just kind of try to educate people and do the best I can with the tools I have.
Well, when we get back, if you have a call for of Radio Liberty or for Bruce Adamson, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly Bruce has been on the front lines of this. He began in the early 1990s. He has written, how many books have you written now?
I've got 14, and they're on CD, so that's okay. The easiest way.
In fact, you can get the whole thing on CD. It costs you a fortune to get them all on CD. And as time exactly how to go about doing that, it's important that you understand the battle of the United States. They've covered it up all these years, and surrounding his death is still classified to find out. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is his research going into the background of the murder of an American president. Now, where did you find the papers going into the background of Lyndon Johnson's meetings with George de Moonshelt, who was Lee Harvey Oswald's handler?
Well, I found the House Select Committee that you mentioned in 1977, published in but they block out the name of who de Moonshelt is meeting in Washington. When they not go down to his library and de Moonshelt.
What was this? Where were these papers coming from?
This is from the CIA.
All right, fine. So
the CIA blacked out Lyndon Johnson's name, and the only way I was able to prove is I found the actual letters between Lyndon Johnson and de Moonshelt right at that time.
And so you were able to get now did you get the paper, the letter from the CIA, or did you get it from some other source?
I got the letter from the House Select Committee on Assassination.
All right, they
published it and it's at Berkeley. Only some libraries have it. It's not. It's a large set, but I found the actual letters at the LBJ Library in Austin, Texas, University of Texas.
All right. So basically what had happened was the CIA had the information. They didn't want the people on the Select Committee to know, so they released the letter.
But they
blacked out the name Lyndon Johnson. And so Bruce went down to the LBJ library, found the other copy of the letter, the one that was in Lyndon
Both
Johnson's
letters.
Files. Right. So now, of course, he's got the letter. He finds out what the CIA doesn't want them to know. Why does the CIA not want the public to know, or anybody to know, that George de Moonshelt was meeting with Lyndon
Johnson?
And, of course, the thing is, everything is done to conceal the truth. Well, right now we've got Mike on the line. Mike, does you have a question? Mike, are you there? Go ahead, Mike. Mike, are you there? I don't hear Mike. Mike, you're not there. All right, fine. Well, we'll get back to Mike later on. So maybe he'll come back after the break. All right, fine. Well, anyway, let's go ahead.
Do you want to talk about this other letter?
Sure, go ahead. And of course, these are things right here.
This letter was written in 1953 from Alan Dulles, February 27th, 3 days after he took over as office as CIA director.
All right, fine. And who is the letter to?
It's to Dmitri von Moonshelt, the brother of Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend, George von Moonshelt.
All right, fine.
And it says, Mr. Dulles was Lyndon Johnson's first choice as a warrant commissioner. 10 years later, but this is in February 1953, right when Bush is forming his Zapata Oil, and right when Prescott Bush and Neil Mellon are writing to Alan Dulles. And at this very time, DeMornchild's father-in-law is in charge of more than 250 CIA agents at the state. He was a State Department official. He was being borrowed by this agency. And I sued the State Department. And the father-in-law, DeMornchild, it has in charge of more than 250 CIA.
At the time, this is the father, George DeMornchild's
father-in-law.
Father-in-law he is obviously a very highly placed person in the CIA. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Sidney. In studio with us this afternoon is Bruce Adamson. We're talking about the Kennedy assassination, and this was George DeMornchild's father-in-law, who actually was in charge of 250 CIA agents. He was very highly placed in the agency.
And then he was in charge of the coup in Guatemala from 50 to 53.
Okay, and so, of course, then that was actually where they killed a lot of the people there in charge. And our CIA was killing people in Guatemala. Nobody is ever held responsible. In fact, there are many people who say that Henry Kissinger, of course, was supervising that whole thing, and he should be held responsible. I don't know whether that's true or not, but certainly what happened in Guatemala at that time was a terrible crime. We've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Stan. Thanks. I just want to ask Bruce a question. There have been four presidents assassinated, and at least three of them have one thing in common, and possibly the fourth, Garfield being the one I'm not sure of. But the other three, McKinley, Lincoln, and Kennedy, have all had in common presidential policies they were trying to implement that went against the wishes of the big money corporations, today known as the Federal Reserve. I wondered if you've ever researched into any of those other two, or I know you've looked into that aspect of John Kennedy's presidency, and it's possibly one of the four or five significant reasons why he might have been assassinated.
All right, well, let's ask Bruce then. Have you looked at all into the Kennedy, or pardon me, into the Lincoln or McKinley assassinations?
I looked into the Lincoln assassination. In fact, I'm working on a Civil War, but assassination. The Bush's other side of the family, and their Wall Street barons, and you might have heard of the George or the Walker Golfing Cup. That's named in honor of George Bush Sr.'s grandfather, Herbert Walker. And the Walkers are anybody having prior knowledge that the assassination is going to take place. Could make a fortune off the New York Stock Exchange by selling their companies short before the event, a month, 2 months, 3 months. Well, JFK's landlord, who was a friend of George DeMornchild, a guy named C. Michael Paul, sold Kidder and Peabody in July of 1963. So I'm sure he made much more money by selling in July of 1963, had he tried to sell it November 23rd, 1963. So that's one of the aspects that I've looked at. Other people have met, but I'm not an expert on that.
Anybody who begins to challenge the money power, and that's, of course, why Andrew to this day. And, of course, there were several unsuccessful attempts on his life because he did away with the central bank from, I think it was from 1813. We did not have a central bank up until 1913 and 1914.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about this real quick is that John Wilkes Booth dated a lady named Lucy P. Hale, who was the daughter of a senator, and he was engaged to get married to her. Well, Oliver Wendell Holmes dated her. She married William Chandler, but shortly before the assassination, John Wilkes Booth saw her dancing with Robert Lincoln. Now, whether that, plus his views on the South, threw him to do what he did, I don't know.
We do know there was an assassination of some sort. What most Americans do not know is that there are actually, I think, either four or five people besides Wilkes who were actually executed for us in the conspiracy, but I don't think they ever really got to the very highest level where this conspiracy, I suspect, began. Anything else, Mike?
No, that's all. Thanks.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. And, of course, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-464-8295. And it's very difficult for people to believe that there really are conspiracies. There's not a conspiracy behind the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Why did they assassinate four or five people there who were affiliated with John Wilkes Booth? And, of course, anybody who honestly believes the story that the government has tried to make you to believe about Lee Harvey Oswald being a lone gunman has never asked, why did Jack Ruby, who was a low-life mafia mobster, why did he walk into the prison there in Dallas and gun down Lee Harvey Oswald? I mean, what possibly would have motivated him to do it? Well, if you want to know that, it was covered in a book we carry called Double Cross, written by the brother of the head of the mafia. And when you read it, you'll understand, of course, why Jack Ruby did what he did. And why, when he was willing to tell the members of the Warren Commission what was it was really all about, he suddenly developed cancer and was dead in just a couple of days. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Bruce Adamson, who's in studio with me, and I've known Bruce for many years. But Bruce has done a phenomenal job collecting George Des Moines Shell, who was, for all intents and purposes, the CIA handler of Lee Harvey Oswald. And certainly, Des Moines Shell's agency relationships to the CIA.
Well, as I said, his brother to Alan Dulles, and there's the letter from Alan Dulles in 1953 to Dmitri von Mornschild. But why did the CIA destroy this letter? I found it at the Hoover Institute.
In other words, the CIA is destroying the evidence so people will never know.
Right.
Just like they're destroying so much of the information about what really happened on 9/11. For instance, there was an article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on the 12th of September of 2001 talking about Mayor Willie Brown being notified on the evening of the 10th. That article just disappeared. It was only in one edition of the Chronicle. Somebody took it out. Somebody took it down off the Internet website. And had it not been for one of our listeners that actually had a copy of the newspaper, the early morning edition of the Chronicle, nobody would have had a copy of that. In fact, I distributed that all across America, because the last thing they wanted anybody to know was that somebody had warned Mayor Willie Brown that it was going to be very dangerous to travel on the morning of September 11th. Now, in the same way that they've gone back and they've covered up all the information having to do with the assassination. So basically it was George Des Moines Shell's brother was affiliated with the CIA. His father-in-law was affiliated with the CIA.
All at the same time.
And what were the other connections that
Well, at the had? Very same time, 1953, Des Moines Shell's wife, fourth wife, is working with Abe Zapruder, who filmed the assassination.
All right, that makes it very, very convenient, doesn't
it? And they both belong to the same CIA organization, which is called the Which Alan Dulles and Neil Mallon. Neil Mallon was thought so highly by George Bush Sr. that George Bush Sr. named his son Neil Mallon Bush.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be minutes. That's Neil Mallon Bush, right?
Yeah, he was involved in the scandal, you remember?
Right. And so there's a close relationship between George Herbert Walker Bush and Neil Mallon. And we're going to be back here in just a moment at 888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this Dr. Stan here studio is the world's lead on George Des Moines Sheldon. Before we go on, though, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get the material that you have, how they can get the CD that you have, and get other information going into the background. Really, your work of over many years and the 14 books you've actually written, and they're all on a CD now.
Right, right. And I included Des Moines Shell's personal phone book on the CD, and his book, I'm a Patsy, I'm a Patsy, which was published in the House Select Committee on Assassination. On the CD, and I put over $200,000 of research beginning in 1990 in traveling and
Well, tell me, what was this book that de Moorenschot wrote called I'm a Patsy, I'm a Patsy? Was he going into the background of Lee Harvey Oswald and how it had been set up?
Oh, yeah. It's a 100-page book, and it's double-spaced. There are a lot of typos and stuff, but it still gives you a lot of ideas. It goes into how he's dating Jackie Kennedy's mother. It goes into how he set Oswald up, and he quotes himself, the greatest assassin in the Western Hemisphere. That's what he says about himself.
About himself. And, of course, obviously he's trying to get the truth out, and then, of course, he...
And embarrasses his uncle by marriage, and that's William S. Paley at CBS.
All right. So, of course, Paley was involved with the CIA, wasn't he?
Right. He admitted that.
And, of course, basically you have to understand the CIA was into turning on your television, CBS. You'll see in the right lower quadrant that occult symbol of the eye there. That is a typical occult symbol. In fact, they hide their symbols every place. The secret society's been doing this for... And there's so much of in your television where they have the symbols hidden. In fact, we carry a book called Freemasonic or Masonic and Occult Symbols. Over 700 symbols that you see every day. And you do not realize that they are put out there by the secret societies to identify what to turn on your... every time you turn on your television to see it there.
Well, I have the symbol of the CIA on my web, and then I have a book, and I have on one side JFK and the other side de Moorenschot. So,
right.
So I'm not trying to, you know, I just use what I'm writing about.
And these symbols are every place, on the back of the dollar bill. This whole thing is a cult, but the average individual doesn't realize it because they hide their symbols in plain sight. Well, so, Bruce, as you with Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Yes.
George Bush has known him for many years. And
Prescott Bush worked across the Senate from Lyndon Johnson as the Connecticut senator, and he retired right when de Moorenschot is writing to Lyndon Johnson, or hanging out with Oswald, and a week later writing to Lyndon Johnson, vice versa.
And I think what's so interesting is how they set Lee Harvey Oswald to appear to be pro-communist. Supposedly he's passing out flyers for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Supposedly he's in contact with the Cuban embassy. And this is all to create a persona, sort of like Lee Harvey.
Did you want me to give my web address?
Oh, sure. Yeah, please give your website and your
and mention that you,
people can get in touch with you.
If anybody's interested, mention that you heard me on Radio Liberty so I can donate to Radio Liberty. The website is just CIAJFK.com.
CIAJFK.com, right?
So that's, and you can read all about the books there.
All right, now is there a telephone number where people...
Well, I can give an email address.
All right, fine. Give the email address.
It's bca@ciajfk.com.
BCA, that's, of course, Bruce, what's the C for?
Campbell.
Bruce Campbell Adamson.
Adamson.
All right, fine.
Mother came over from Scotland.
Okay, fine. JFKCIA.com.
CIAJFK.com.
CIAJFK.com. Okay, if you didn't get that, why, you can give us a call. We'll get
or you can do a search, but make sure you mention Radio Liberty.
All right, fine. Please do. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Bruce, certainly he's done a tremendous amount of research on this. And, of course, there are so many connections here between Abe Zapruder.
Yeah, it wasn't natural that he's standing there and he keeps panning, but he says he hears the bullets whistling by his ears.
And, of course, but he's taking these
pictures
right, so that we can supposedly see what happened. The only trouble is they doctored the pictures. They could not let the American people know the truth that they'd assassinated an American president.
But I have the actual list of the members of the Dallas Council on World Affairs, which was founded by, guess who?
Who?
Neil Mallon.
Okay, and then, of course, you've got both de Moorenschot and Oswald. Okay.
And the Dallas Council on World Affairs. And Bush thought so highly of him that he named
Small World. Let's go to question and comment.
I met a woman down at the table where I was and briefly... resting, and we got into talk. She was a relative guard of Oswald, but of Timothy McVeigh.
Right.
This guard relative murdered, and so were other guards of Timothy McVeigh murdered after you know, the execution. Apparently, she says they knew too much.
Well, I think that the thing is that they could not let the American people know the truth about what happened at Oklahoma City. I do know, for instance, that a psychiatrist named Dr. Jocelyn West, from the CIA was his visitor there. Why would a CIA psychiatrist be going to visit Timothy McVeigh? And then, of course, what happened to his remains? There are many, many people who wonder.
Well,
in fact, there was a fellow, he's a broadcaster in Texas, and immediately after the McVeigh execution, he kept playing this tape over and over on his program. And it was a woman who'd been invited to witness the execution of Timothy McVeigh, and her remark was, "Gee, I didn't know that you kept breathing after you were dead."
Hey,
and he kept playing that over and over and over again. And the next thing we knew, why, he himself was dead. He was actually killed by a SWAT team.
Oh.
So anyway, anything else you want to say?
I got two other ones, and I have a question. I recently got like 3 months in hospitals because everything's so expensive. And I was data about various stuff, and I mentioned your name, and I mentioned ones, and all these things. We're writing it down. About 50% at least were receptive. One of the people, actually, he was there, and there's another guy, but Russian, who spent a lot of his adult life in England. But he was in Russia. He was in Moscow, apparently, at the time. Was it 2000 or 1999?
Right.
And he says, he noticed that a young woman called a radio station, not her family. And then the next day, there were placards out saying, you know, in Red Square, demonstrating Chechnya. And the placards, if they were made out of watercolors, they would have run because of the print, which means that they were printed.
Could have very well been.
There's another thing. When I was in prior at a hostel, and the guy there I got to know brought a video of, you know, they made one of the major videos. Well, one of the videos, watch it there with him, and the video showed, and in the first tower, almost an hour after the plane hit, but before the thing came crashing down, elevator door opened, and out walked businessmen, very confused, looking around. Yeah, they were stuck up in an elevator, and if the government story was accurate, those guys would have been fried.
Talking about the fact that supposedly the jet fuel streamed down the elevator, burned all the people there in the lobby.
Yeah, ridiculous.
I know. You see, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. If you say it often enough on NBC, people will believe, we got to run, we got a lot of callers. Yeah. Thanks so very much, Bob.
Well, a question. Have you heard the, Michael Burr's book says that the Kennedy assassination was authorized by Lord Rothschild, and the three crowning events is he had printed up money to buy back the Federal Reserve away from the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Warburgs, and that he had also demanded, he had refused Israel, and that 2 months before he was assassinated, he demanded that the American security people, uranium inspectors or nuclears have met in Israel.
Oh, right. I haven't heard that.
No, based up that Michael Collins Piper says it's a conspiracy. Is this Linda? Hi, do you have a quick
question about a book that I just read? It's about the role J.J. in the Kennedy assassination.
What's the title of the book?
That is the title of the book, Treason.
Act of Treason. Do you know anything about that, Bruce?
But anyway, a lot of documents, and one of the documents is a field office Miami document.
You're fading
in and out. We're going to have to let you go. But I think that there's no question at all that J. Edgar Hoover knew about it.
He's in Bush, where he's briefing George Bush of the CIA. That I think.
It was a threat on Obama's office. and during every MIDI, and he perjured himself against the president.
I see. Well, because Lee, I have to understand that Mason was deeply involved with the occult, and they maintained his grave there. He was also a homosexual and a cross-dresser, and the fact that most Americans have never heard that simply reflects that to go because we've got a poor connection, but let's go to Lynn. Linda, how are you doing?
This is about Kennedy. In 1992, during the presidential election, we had a office for a pendant presidential party, and they were passing out flyers that said a man came in to the office that this one evening. His mother happened to be there. He had some pamphlets, and he started to read, and he had a knob, and then he hesitated. But I was standing over there. And then I was nervous. CIA. I was in the CIA for 20 years. I was there. I heard him say it. He said George Bush went to Joseph Kennedy and said, quote, those two boys have got to go. Joseph Kennedy, the father, gave the okay to George Bush Sr. to have his two sons assassinated.
And that's very difficult to believe, but I'm sure that I doubt very much that you can lightly to that.
What Dr. Safi and Oregon people kill their own, they eat their own. What are you talking about?
So much for calling, Lydia. Well, let's go to John calling from Chicago.
And is Bruce familiar with a man named Abraham Bolden, a Secret Service agent in Chicago?
Story
of November 2nd with Thomas Arthur Valley. Bolden's name, B-O-L-D-E-N, Valley, V-A-L-L-E-E. Thomas Arthur Valley was picked up, detained on conspiracy charges, conspiracy to assassinate the president. Abraham Bolden told a much different story of the Valley affair. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard Valley, but I DeMarcio.
Bolden was the Secret Service agent who had demanded to testify before the Warren Commission. While the commission was in session, he was framed and thrown in jail for 8 years.
No, I'm sorry. It's
Abraham Bolden, B-O-L-D-E-N.
Okay, well, look, thanks very much for
you. Hello, Dr. Sam, excuse me, please. Is he familiar with a man named Roger Craig, Detective Roger Craig?
No.
R-A-I-G?
No, I think John is, pardon me, Bruce is baiting on Des Moines Hill. That's
right.
His field of expertise. Thanks so much. Thanks very much, and certainly there's so much information out there. In fact, they have intentionally published so many books, and many of these are actually books for disinformation to actually confuse you. And whether it be Michael Collins Piper's book or many of the others, you know, of course, the Michael Collins Piper, it's all the Jews, Victor Posner, it was Lee Harvey Oswald. There are hundreds of books that have been written, and many of them are frank disinformation. Why? Because you get so much think effectively about what's going on. Have you encountered that, Bruce, as you've analyzed what's going on?
Oh, well, that's why I just stuck with Des Moines Show, because there are so many different paths to go down. And the Texas oilmen fit into my work, and the CIA kind of fit, like you said, together. If it fits solid. And there's a whitey there, and it's... It works. It forced these pieces to fit. They either fit or they don't.
Well, we have a wonderful interview with Madeline Duncan Brown, who was Lyndon Johnson's mistress. And we actually have it in our four-tape set on the second four-tape set on Kennedy, where she actually talks about the meeting they held before the night before the assassination. You ever hear that story, Bruce?
Yeah. Apparently there was a party and
that was I think of the Bunker Huntsville, at least the Hunts.
FBI Director Hoover was there.
And, of course, Lyndon Johnson was there, and people from the CIA were there, and people from the Mafia were there, and that's where they planned the assassination.
Well, I think the planning probably went in before, but...
I'm sure it did. I'm sure
or the celebration went in.
Right. Of course, I'm sure it's long-term planning to accomplish this, the murder of an American president, and they had to have both of our intelligence agencies involved.
CIAJFK.com.
Okay, Bruce, let's get your telephone number up. We've got three more minutes before I let you go.
Do we want to do it now?
Go right ahead.
Oh, you can email me at bca@got.net or bca@ciajfk.com. And just make sure you mention Radio Liberty so I can contribute to Stan's cause.
Well, we'll appreciate that, and we'll let you get that out one more time when we get back. And we've got Larry calling here. Larry's calling from Paso Robles. Hi, Larry. Do you have a question for us?
Hi, Dr. Stan, for your guest. I was just watching a program last night on Discovery Channel.
I'm hearing commercial.
Go ahead.
About the magic bullet.
All right, fine. So Larry's asking, what about the magic bullet now?
Well, again, somebody like Dr. Gary Aguilar can answer that better than I could. But, you know, I kind of, I just, my opinion is that there was a dent in the windshield. There's a dent in the windshield rim. There was a curb that was shattered. They threw that away. There are so many other important parts. And Jack Ruby was seen near the stretcher that magic pristine bullet was found on by one White House reporter named Seth Cantor.
Okay, well, Larry, what was the point that you'd like to make?
The thing I was going to get at, because they didn't go through a lot of things like the headshot or anything else. They just went through the fact that they were able to use a material, plastic-like material, that they would simulate a human body and stuff and have two bodies in a row and fire a shot through them using the same kind of gun and everything, and that the bullet came out very similar to what they, you know, what the magic bullet was. But they didn't answer any of the rest of the questions. I was just curious. I guess my question was, if you'd seen the program, or if anybody else had, whether or not it was disinformation or what.
I'm sure it was disinformation. The bullet actually, of course, supposedly went through President Kennedy. It went through Governor Johnson, not Johnson, but
Conley,
Conley. And then, of course, went through his right wrist and went then into his left thigh. It left large segments of metal in them, because I've talked to the doctor, Dr. Crenshaw, who was actually there in the emergency room when they debrided the wounds. And then the bullet reconstituted itself and into pristine condition, and was found there on the stretcher. And Dr. Crenshaw was warned that if he ever told the truth about what he saw that day in the emergency room at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, he would never be able to practice medicine. That's the sort of things that they did to cover up the truth, and they're still trying to cover it up, Larry.
They're good at it, too. I mean, it was an interesting program. But anyway, well, thank you very much. I don't want to take up any more time. Someone else can get in.
God bless. Bye-bye.
And you too. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bruce, I'm going to give you just one more time to get out your email address, to get out your website.
Okay, it's CIAJFK.com or BCA@CIAJFK.com, and please mention Radio Liberty, and I will contribute.
All right, fine. Thanks very much for being with us, Bruce. And always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you, Stan.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported primarily, and we would appreciate hearing from you. We need your help to maintain the base that we have now with over 60 outlets every single week. Now, we do have two great four-tape sets on the Kennedy assassination. The first one is 2 hours with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, 1 hour with Lee Harvey Oswald, and 1 hour with Dr. Crenshaw, who was there in the emergency room at the Parkland Hospital when they brought the president in, and the wounds you heard described were not the ones he saw. And he was warned to be quiet. He waited 20 or 25 years before he told the truth. He was, of course, immediately attacked by the media, including the Journal of the American Medical Association. He sued the Journal of the American Medical Association. They gave him, I think, about $100,000 or $200,000, saying, well, we know we're right, but, of course, it'll cost more than that to defend the case. We know he's lying. But, of course, they paid him off a large sum of money. Why? Because they cannot let the American people know that the wounds you saw described, the magic bullet, are all a lie. We have a second four-tape set with interviews with Madeleine Duncan Brown. We do carry her book, Texas in the Morning. We have, of course, a great deal of additional information on the Kennedy assassination. We carry the book, Double Cross, the story of the head of the brother of the head of the mafia. And we carry the book, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, which is written by our good friend Craig Roberts, going into the background of what he was able to find and who it was who actually did the assassination. All of this is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We even have a Kennedy special you can get if you call us at that number, 1-800-544-8927. You need to at least understand the background of the Kennedy assassination, to understand the background of Pearl Harbor, to understand the background of what happened at Oklahoma City, to understand what happened on September 11th, because everything is being done to conceal the truth from the American people. And because there are 14 intelligence agencies, and many people have come forward and tried to tell the truth, and some of them have been killed. Others, of course, have been intimidated into silence. Well, but we all have to speak out because, you know, to remain silent in times like these makes cowards of men. Our job is to try to get the American people to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, and there is organized evil that is leading us into World War III. And that's what the war in Iraq is about, but it will soon be expanding into Syria and into Iran, and heaven only knows where it's going to end up. They're doing everything they can to inflame the anger and fury of the Muslims throughout the world. Because after all, you have to have an enemy you hate, an enemy that hates you, if you're going to get the war going. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like our latest newsletter on the Iraq, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. Get our newsletter called The Wrong War. And if you can pull it down at our website at RadioLiberty.com. Go to our website and notice the various items that we carry there, the books we carry, and of course you carry the 2-4 tape sets on the Kennedy assassination. And then, of course, tell your friends about it, our programs. Encourage them to listen. Encourage them to support us. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this battle. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.